Hill. Shot doesn't go. 24 seasons in the making. The Toronto Raptors are headed to their first NBA Finals.
I could spend the next minute and change telling you about what the Toronto Raptors have accomplished by making it to the NBA Finals for the first time in their history. I could talk about the greatness of Kawhi Leonard. I could talk about rotations and three-point percentage and usage rate. But you'll get more than enough of that, basically everywhere. I could also tell you just how amazing the countrywide support for this franchise has been, and why even if you'd never previously watched a ball go in a hoop, you still might have been caught up in the madness. I could do that, but I will let the team's second most important fan tell you that instead.
Look at this. We created this. This didn't exist before we were here. We did this. Doesn't matter what anybody says. They can say it's disrespectful. They can say it's this and that and that. Everybody's within the rules. Everybody's doing their thing. All we are is proud and passionate. We are like a college sports team. The Toronto Raptors are a college sports team. I promise you. I love Toronto. I love this team. And we're going to the NBA Finals.
Yes, that was Drake. And no, he's not the Raptors' most important fan. That honor belongs to our guest today. And if you know who I'm talking about here, I don't need to explain anything else. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, and you are wondering why, exactly, this basketball team, with a gimmicky dinosaur name and a history of futility, matters so much to a city, to a country, and to one man in particular, well then, you are in for a treat. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. If you have ever watched a Raptors home game on television, you have seen Nav Bhatia. He is known as the super fan. He sits courtside under the basket. He screams, he waves towels, he cheers his guts out, and he has done that for every single home game since this franchise was founded 24 years ago. Nav, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
Can you tell me, because there's been a ton of interest in your story and what it means to the Raptors and Canada, can you start by telling me when you came to Canada and what life was like?
I came here in 1984 during a very dark time in the Indian history. And that was the time when there was a genocide with the Sikhs, and I'm a Sikh with turban and beard, you know, we are Sikh, we were being massacred. We had no safe place in our home or in our even in temple. And when you don't have a safe roof on your head, everything else is useless. If your life is at stake, what is life about that? Right? There's nothing. So we left India in 84, one at a time. I was the first one. All my family came here. I was the first one and lucky one, me and my wife, to get into Canada. And basically started, I'm a mechanical engineer. But at that time in 84... Canada was not that open-minded or enlightened, so I couldn't get a job with my turban and beard. So I did odd jobs, and finally I landed a job as a car salesman. And there also I was made a lot of fun about. But, you know, I knew that I have to work harder. I was called names like bad names, Towelhead, you know, all those kind, Packy, all those names, which are not good names. But, you know, that actually in a way gave me some determination. I never argued with the people who called me those, but that gave me the determination that I got to be better than good if I want to survive.
So what did you do?
I sold 127 cars in 3 months and got not just the attention of those guys who made fun of me, I got the attention of whole Hyundai Corporation. And finally, they moved me into a... So I became a manager and a general manager, and they moved me into a dealership in Mississauga called Mississauga Hyundai, and the dealership was failing and ailing, and you know, they asked me, they said, now, you know, you are very good with what you do, can you turn around this dealership? And you know, it was a little bit attitude, you know, human being, you know, attitude that I'm good, I can do it, you know.
Yeah.
So I did that. The very first day I went there, I had a staff of 9 people and 8 salespeople, white people, quit on me. They didn't want it to work for me.
Really?
Yeah, they said, no, we don't want to work for a guy with a turban and this. So these were the times. They were tough times, but it gave me more determination. So what I did at that time, I decided to work extra hard because I had taken a sort of oath to myself that I'm going to make sure that this leadership doesn't fail. So I recreated a team which was okay to work with a guy like me. And finally, we were number one in 91. A few years later, we were number one in Canada. And once again, God was very good to me. And 95, the Raptors came. And I was excited because I was comfortable. I had a house. I had a job. I had a couple of cars. So, you know, I was feeling good.
And yeah, why'd you buy those first tickets to the Raptors?
You know, I used to watch basketball over the tube, American channels. You know, it was Chicago. It was Michael Jordan. It was Larry Bird. It was Isaiah Thomas. It was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. All those guys, you know, Dr. J. Amazing, you know. So I said, well, let me try these two tickets. And I could only afford two at the time.
Yeah.
I have more now, but I could only afford two at the time.
They weren't courtside back then?
No, they were not courtside. They were a little bit further away, but I bought two. And you know what? I fell in love with this game. And it was an exciting game. Even during the timeout, like for 2.5-3 hours, you forget about everything in the world. You are right, just focused. And I was very focused. I loved it every minute of it. I'll come there 1 hour early and I'll leave when all everything is gone. So I enjoyed myself, talked to various people and all that, made the loudest noise. I was the loudest on the arena. And then one day in 98-99 season, Isaiah Thomas, our vice president and general manager, calls me and says, you're going to stay in the arena. You're going to stay here. I need you. I said, okay. So he called my name in the halftime. He took me to the center court in Skydome and gave me a very special jersey with the dinosaur and number one super fan written on it. And he announced to the whole arena, this is our super fan. Man, I was shocked. I didn't have any idea. I was humbled, but I also said, no, I made it now.
Yeah.
I made it now. I'm the face of the Raptors, the new NBA, NBA. I'm the face of the NBA team.
How did it feel to be in those crowds and to be Sikh like yourself in a changing Canada? What were those crowds like after you were named super
fan? It was changing at the time, but still not. You know, it was that was 99. So what happened is, I'm going to share a story which a lot of people know about who know me, which changed me further, but in a good way. One thing is that when somebody calls me a name or somebody, I don't argue, you know, because I think it's their lack of knowledge is the worst thing. And sometimes they don't know about it. They don't understand that we can look different. We are maybe a little bit different. We wear different. But our passion is the same inside. 99.99%, you bring me a Jewish guy, Indian guy, Sikh guy, Muslim guy, Buddhist guy, whatever guy you want to bring me. You ask them three questions that what does your religion has the principles. I tell you, everybody will be the same. Anyway, one day, I was on the top of the world because I was the Raptors super fan, right? So I'm, you know, I had a little
swagger.
Swagger about it, you know. And I go to, and I was wearing, and you know, this is at my work, and I'm going to my phone didn't work, the mobile phone at that time. So I go to a repair shop, and this guy is sitting on the corner seat with a curtsy phone. You know, there used to be curtsy rotary phones at the time. And, you know, they were old time. I don't know if you were born at that time. You were. Okay. So this white guy looks at me, and I'm the only one in the room. He looks at me. He's talking to someone and says, honey, I got to go. My cab is here.
Oof.
Oh, my God. I said, I'm the only one here.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a, you know, nice Versace suit, nice Versace tie.
You own a dealership by this point.
Yeah, I was a dealer, you know. But I said, man, and I didn't get upset at him though. I didn't think it was his fault. I thought the fault was ours, Sikhs, our religious leader, because they hadn't done enough to integrate into the mainstream. You can't stay at home and then go out and now. You got to integrate. Your neighbor is there, you got to integrate with them. You got to be in that society, into that, so that they can understand you and you can understand them. But the onus is more on us than them. That's the way I feel. So
some people don't agree with that.
Well, I think that's our onus. We should go. I always feel, go out of your comfort zone. Always. Even for you know, let's say who are here, I would say the white people or black people, go out of your zone where you're not welcome and integrate.
Was that what basketball was to you a little bit at the beginning?
Yes. I mean, it started. I'm going to tell you that now. Right now, I was only entertainment, looking at Michael Jordan come here and play, looking at all the big star play. I mean, it was amazing, a fast game, and you're sitting like right there. But then on that day, I realized I got to do much more than that. If we want to, you know, make a better society, better community, better country, we got to do more than that. I went to Raptors. I'm a crazy guy in that way. I always spend more than I make. I went and bought 3,000 tickets from the Raptors. And they said, what are you going to do? I said, I want to celebrate my New Year's in the arena. And those were the time I did my New Year's. It's called Baisakhi. And if you Google, you know, I used to bring an elephant to hand me over the ball.
Yeah.
Those were the times, you know, I used to bring the ball. And, you know, people used to love it and all that. And we used to celebrate our game in a traditional way, our culture in a traditional way. And I used to bring kids from Jane and Finch. I kids from YMCA.
I remember seeing clips
of
those.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I bring kids from everywhere. From the Sikh temple, from Hindu temple, from Muslim mosque. I used to bring the kids. And you know why I did that? I did that so that all these kids at the young age, you know, when they're 10, 11, 12, they're innocent. I wanted them to integrate at young age. I want a Jewish kid sitting next to the Sikh kid, next to the black kid, next to a girl, all those, you know, everybody sitting together and doing one thing, cheering for their team.
Yeah.
That brings them together. They go next day to their home, to their family, to their relatives, and they say, so-and-so was sitting with me. We had this basketball. We watched this. We watched that. And you know what? That experiment, I did that starting in 99. I did it every year since then. All those kids who were 12, 13, 14 year old at the time, in 2010 or 2013, 2014, they were 25 years old.
Yeah.
They had a full-time job. So they were able to buy the tickets. And now we are about 3,500 of our people. I don't know the exact number. I might be wrong here and there. But we have thousands of people who come to the game who are brown. They are Sikhs with the turbans because they're doing well and they love basketball. And that's why when you go to our arena, and I've been to a lot of arenas, our arena has the best look. And that's why when Raptors, I don't know if you know, Raptors have won the diversity award year after year after year for the last 10 years.
It seems like this week with the Raptors in the final, people from the rest of the basketball world are kind of looking towards Toronto. And, you know, they see all the success. They see you, they see Drake. Tell me about first, before we get to that good stuff, what it was like to be there every day courtside. This team had a lot of tough years.
Ups and downs, ups and downs.
You were there for that whole stretch though.
Oh my God. I was, you know.
Tell people who are just paying attention now how tough
that was.
Well,
I'm not going to welcome to the, you know, I want them to welcome to this exciting game of basketball, especially the Raptors, you know. But there were times when we only won 16 games.
Yeah.
There were times when there were only hardly 7, 8,000 people sitting, 9 people in the arena. There was a time when people would make fun of us, the Raptors fan. I will tell you, I'll go to a coffee shop and people will come to me and they say, oh, your Raptors suck. Oh, your Raptors are some even worse things.
Yeah.
You know, they will tell me, why are you wasting your time? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? You're wasting time. You're a loser. You're this. Now, you know, it has changed because we have been winning for the last 4 or 5 years. And thanks to all the, you know, all the players who have come before this and set up us nicely. And we are winning. And but I've seen a lot of low times, yes. And I appreciate, though, everybody pulling for the Raptors right now, not just in Toronto, but around Canada and around. I got called from Australia. Hey, we are going to be watching it. I got called from India. We are for the Raptors. Even though the game is going to come 4 in the morning, we are going to be up 4 in the morning and watch the game. So that's what I like that. I like that. And that's where I'm proud of the Raptors NBA. They are a very good corporation. They're very inclusive. And I just feel that during the next few years, we have a lot of work to be done yet because there's a lot of Don't just look at the Raptors arena here, but there's arenas like in Milwaukee, Memphis, and some other places where there are a lot of other ethnic communities around the arena or in that area, but they don't come to the game. I was surprised to be in Milwaukee, where we have a good population of South Asians and that, around the area. There were hardly 10, 15 people of our community.
Well, you got some reaction in Milwaukee that might explain a bit of that. Tell me what happened.
Well, everybody knows now it went viral. You know, somebody in Milwaukee, a fan of Milwaukee, put a not a good comment. He put a racist comment. It was the fourth game after they lost it, you know. And the next morning, I'm told that there is a racist comment about me. And I felt bad for the person who did it. I didn't know him. I don't know him still. But I talked to him after that. But anyway, I felt sorry for him. I prayed for him because it's not needed. But I knew that he was lacking something. Like, he has never gone out of Milwaukee. He has never seen a Sikh.
Mm-hmm.
But that still doesn't give him the right to write like that, because human being is human being. Doesn't matter what color shade you are. So the next game was 2 days later in Milwaukee. I go to Milwaukee. I've been asked by Milwaukee station to talk to them.
Yeah.
So I go there. I talked. They have a Jurassic Park also with 10, 12,000 people with a big TV screen and all that. So they have a very good new arena. So I go there and I do the interview, and I come out of the interview. People can look at me because it was like an interview outside.
Right.
And I come out and there is a lineup of Milwaukee fan guys. You know, huge guys with beer in their hand, like this big, you know, a liter of beer in their hands, and they wanted to take a picture. So they hugged me, gave me, and I guess this guy who wrote it, this tweet, saw all this and then Googled me, and I think realized that he has done something wrong. So he approached me and wanted to talk to me, and I definitely wanted to talk to him, not because of any hatred. I didn't have any hatred for him. I had actually prayed for him. So I talked to him for like 10, 15 minutes. He has a kid who is 10 years old who plays basketball. And I asked him, do you want your kid to learn all these things? You want him to tweet like that? And he almost was weeping. He says, no, I'm a stupid guy. I'm so stupid. I did that. And I couldn't sleep. And I want your forgiveness. I said, that's okay. Everybody makes mistakes. Don't worry. We forgive and we move forward. And when I come next time to Milwaukee, I'm going to take you for a bite to eat and take your son for a game, or, you know, get him some stuff from the players. I'm going to sort of souvenirs from the players, sign some stuff and give it to him. He was shocked a little bit that I was saying that to him, but I'm sure he was able to absorb that later on. And I said, look, don't kill yourself now. Don't be cursing yourself, because there is a good thing which has come out of this. He says, what good thing came? I'm so upset and this. I said, look, out of this negativity, you said you are a bigger guy than anybody because you had the guts to ask for forgiveness. You realize you did something wrong. We all are human. We make mistakes. And look, out of this negativity, we have changed it into positivity. We have become friends. Now you're going to talk to other people and you're going to explain them, hey, no, don't hate it. They are good people, or they're this. And this is how we did that. And that's what I always do. Change the perception of the people in a positive way. Don't say, oh, it's a discrimination, or it's that or that. Find a way, if you can, in a positive way. What if I would have fought with him and wrote some negative about him? It wouldn't have. Now, at least that person, I think, has realized that it is wrong.
Does it ever blow your mind that you've become as big a celebrity as you have? I mean,
have I?
Well, yeah, you're right up there with Drake, with Jay-Z, with Rihanna, all these people that get called out. You're shown on every Raptors broadcast. Everybody's talking about you this week.
Oh, really? Okay, well, it's...
Don't act like you don't know.
No, I mean, it's... I'm still a little guy trying to make a living in a big city, you know? And I joke like that, you know? I mean,
yeah.
God is good. God has given me, and I'm able to... You know, a lot of good things are happening with my little bit of fandom with the basketball. And I'm trying not to just make take my ego up or anything. I want to use it to do some other good things. And one other good thing which I've been able to, God has blessed me to do, is to work with one of the best in the Christian organization by the name of World Vision. I'm the only non-Christian, I believe, who a Sikh guy who's their ambassador, global ambassador. So they came to me two and a half years ago. They came to me and said, look, you know, there's a poor neighborhood where the girls are not going to school. When their period start at the age of 11, they drop out of the school. Yeah. They get married and have kids. And at 14, 15 years old, they have two kids. And I'm a father of a daughter myself. So it touched me. And I also wanted to make sure that this is a right charity for me. And I wanted to make sure that most of the money goes into the project and not into the administration. So we did some due diligence and we found that 85% of their money goes into the projects. So I said, yes, I will. And they gave me the budget that, okay, it's going to be $200,000 to build 60 washrooms in 20 schools. And we are going to be able to have the girls go to continue their education after 11 years. And I want to be very proud and blessed to tell you that we have been able to finish that phase of 60 washrooms. Thousands of girls are going to school and they are going to be somewhere someday. You know, there will be some teachers, doctors and officers, army officer, police officer, pharmaceutical, all that, you know, engineers, they will become. It's very important for me. Education is very important, but for the girls, I feel if anybody, any country wants to enrich themselves, do well, the girls have to be educated.
Yeah.
Very important for me.
I was kind of joking a little bit earlier when I said that everybody's paying attention to you this week and you're part of the story, but you really kind of are. And I wanted to ask you, why do you think that your story of basketball fandom seems to resonate with so many people? I mean, even people in America now are reading stories that Canadians have told about you and how you came to be a fan. And it's touching something with them.
Yeah, but that gives, you know what, that gives a hope to everybody that they can do it. You know, if this guy can do it, we can be there too. You know, I do sometime this. When I'm sitting on a courtside and or somebody leaves early on a courtside and there are two seats available, let's say they go in the fourth quarter. If the game is a little bit too much differential, people leave.
Yeah.
Even on those expensive courtside seats, you know. So what I do is, or even my seat, I'll go out upstairs and bring a couple of kids to sit on those seats. I do that so that they can experience and they can have the bragging rights in the school next day. And it gives them the hope. Man, I can do it. And I give them a little lecture. I talk to them, like little 10-year-old kid, 12-year-old kid. I talk to them. And I tell them that, hey, you can do it too. Work hard. Make sure listen to your parents, listen to your teacher. So that's what I do. And then I go to a lot of schools now to talk to the kids because they have a lot of questions about me. They want to know how I did, how I do this, how I buy these courtside seats and all that. Kids are kids, you know, they want to know. And I tell them in simple language, work hard. Listen to the teachers. Listen to your parents. And you can do this also one day.
What should all the people from American media, American fans, big NBA sponsors, you know how everybody shows up for the finals. What should they know about Canada, about Toronto?
I think when they are in the arena and around arena in the Jurassic Park, they will learn a lot. They will see it. They will see through it that this is the real society should be like, where everybody is together. You know how much fun it is standing in Jurassic Park, 10,000 people. They're coming only there. They don't know. People are standing and they don't know each other. They don't know each other. They're standing there cheering for the team. And once that three-pointer or a block happens or a dunk happens, they start hugging each other, cheering and hugging. How beautiful is that? I think on my tweet, which the guy did, I don't know if you saw that, Mark Cuban also tweeted.
Owner of the Mavericks.
Yeah, owner of the Maverick. Amazing guy, very amazing guy.
And what did he say?
Well, he said, now he's a legend because against that, you know. And then Steve Kerr wrote it.
Yeah.
The Golden State, I don't know if you saw that.
I did. People are sharing this story. That's what we wanted to talk to you.
And it is right now, it's viral in the basketball community. All the players saw that. And they're all, you know, I mean, this is good actually in a way because this will bring awareness. Hey, this is not needed. And if this incident of mine and if this negative tweet about this guy hitting tweet about me can bring a lot of people into the happy mode, into the learning mode, and respecting the other religions, other people as a human being, let it be. I'm okay to take that insult.
Two final quick questions for you. First, call the series.
Raptors in 7.
Is Kawhi Leonard staying?
Answer you on July the 1st.
Thanks, Nav.
Thank you very much, and go Raptors, go.
Nav Bhatia, car maven, super fan, and I'm not the only person calling him a legend this week. That was The Big Story. For more from us, head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. For more on the Raptors, we have literally dozens of people on them at sportsnet.ca. You can find us at TheBigStoryFPN or at FrequencyPods on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram. And of course, anywhere you want us to be, at least on podcatchers, we are there, including Apple and Google and Stitcher and Spotify. And if you like this one, spread the love, leave us a rating, leave us a review. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Go Raptors.